One, two, three, Natalie!
Hi, welcome to the Person Natalie podcast. I'm your host, Natalie. Today's guest is John Lim. John is a co-host of the podcast called Moving Forward, where he interviews entrepreneurs on finding their business and professional passions. He's a former attorney, and his current role is entrepreneur, public speaker, and podcaster. Fun fact about John is that he is a former TV and film actor. He actually co-starred with George Takei in World Enough and Time. The screenplay was written by Emmy Award-winning writer Michael Reeves. So, John, welcome to the show.
Hey, Natalie, how are you?
I'm great. I'm so excited to have you here. I was actually a guest on Moving Forward, and now the tables have turned.
Absolutely. Now I'm in the spotlight.
Okay, so I guess we'll start with kind of how you got your start with Moving Forward. You used to be an attorney, but you kind
of many moons ago
left that field. Yes, so tell me about that transition that you made.
Well, I mean, between attorney and podcaster was a pretty long journey. So, DC attorney, you know, there are not that many of them, Natalie. You know, it's kind of a rare breed.
Yeah.
Graduated from Georgetown, went into practice. It's not that I disliked it. I probably would say I couldn't stand it. It just wasn't something that got me up in the morning. And I will be very candid with you. I went straight from college to law school. And I think I was driven very much by the expectations of what to do with my life and career. Mm-hmm. And I, looking back on it, you know, graduating when I was 25, I had 7 or 8 job offers, very different economy than it is now. Mm-hmm. And I would say I probably wasn't at the point where I was mature enough to make the wisest decision on where to spend my career. Mm-hmm. So I think I was motivated by the wrong things and choosing my first employer out of law school. And that pretty much was the wake-up call for me that this is maybe not what I want to do for the next 50 to 60 years. Mm-hmm. So then I transitioned out of that. I went to work for a Fortune 500 company, and I was doing a lot of account management, more of the business type stuff. And I really enjoyed a lot of that. And that's sort of where I got into more public speaking and presentation. So I was doing a lot of that in my career. And then somewhere along the way, I had taken acting classes before going to law school.
Cool.
And we actually had, I remember there was a retreat that we were on, and we had an acting teacher from Harvard come because she was giving us tips on public speaking skills. And so I volunteered to be one of the guinea pigs, and she said to me, "You really should get back into acting." I started taking classes here in DC at the Theater Lab, which if any of you are in DC, fantastic, fantastic place to take acting classes. They work with people from all levels. And then from there, I started branching out. You know, I'm more interested, I think, in film and TV than I am in theatrical stage acting, which are two completely different animals. I was recommended to a teacher named Brenna McDonough, who teaches in Maryland, and she's absolutely fantastic. One of the best on-camera teachers out there. And she has this style, Natalie, mm-hmm. that if you're camera shy, she pretty much knocks it out of you on day one. Because the way she works is she actually has all of her students film, like she sticks a camera right in your face, makes you recite a script, and makes everyone watch it in playback.
Oh!
So I think that was where I really got the fear of public speaking just completely knocked out of me. And by virtue of that, I started getting that acting bug again. So she said, "You know, I think there are not that many Asian male actors in the DC area." She started sending me casting calls, and I started getting booked on roles for National Geographic, the History Channel. While The Wire was filming in Baltimore, and I'm a Baltimore native, I got a small part on The Wire. So it was really cool. And then I saw, it was a couple of years later, it was around 2004 or 5, that there was a independent Star Trek production that was filming in New York. And I'd seen bits and pieces of it, and it was really cool. And they hadn't cast the role of Sulu, which was originally portrayed by George Takei in the 1960s. If any of you are Star Trek fans, you'll know this. And so I contacted them. I went up for an audition, landed the audition. And next thing I know, the project that I'm involved in, they actually got picked up by this Hollywood producer, Mark Zakrie, who wanted to really give it this ultra professional polish. He really wanted to pitch it as a series to CBS, and he was able to get George Takei to actually come on and portray the original character. So I actually portrayed in World Enough and Time the younger version of George opposite George, which was really just mind-blowing and crazy.
Wow. Wow. All right. So you graduated from law school and you were at this firm and you were kind of doing the acting stuff kind of on the side.
Yes.
And then it kind of developed into something more. And then when did it hit you that you wanted to leave the legal profession?
Well, you know, it's interesting you mention that because the company I worked for my day job, we were in legal information publishing. So even though I had left full-time practice, I was still in the legal sphere. And it was about a year and a half ago, because one of the things that I did was I had in the back of my mind, I wanted to pursue my MBA at some point. And this was years after I kind of played out the acting side of me. So if it sounds like I've been all over the place, the best way I can describe myself is that I have eternal career wanderlust, still trying to figure out what I want to be when I grow up, Natalie. So I've tried a little bit of everything. And it's interesting for me, I realized that acting, as much as I enjoyed the craft of it, I didn't really particularly enjoy the business of acting. And, you know, I moved to LA. I lived in LA for a little while and I had an agent who was very, very aggressive on my behalf and got me lots of auditions. But you're constantly really applying for your next job. So if you want to think about constantly interviewing for your next job, that's pretty much what being an actor is. And the other half of that is you're constantly unemployed too. So it's one of those dynamics where it's you have to really be obsessed with it. And I, at the end of the day, I was not obsessed with it. Mm. In the meantime, I kind of wanted to take all the different skills that I had developed over the years. So, you know, I went to law school. I practiced litigation for a little while. I've done a lot of presentations. I did the acting. And through all of these serendipitous and seemingly disconnected experiences, somewhere along the way, I kind of realized, you know what? I really enjoy public speaking. I really enjoy getting up in front of an audience, presenting, showing the value in the message, and really connecting with the audience. And that's sort of where I got that kernel in the back of my head. Well, maybe there's a reason why you went to law school. There's a reason why you ended up taking a left field job working in corporate America. There's a reason why you got back into acting, even though it didn't fully play out into a long-term career. And the realization, and this is more recent than I came to, is that I really enjoy speaking. I really enjoy connecting with people. And that's something that I'm trying to cultivate now as part of the business that I'm involved in. So I got my MBA. I went as a part-time student. I graduated in fall of, believe it or not, 2013. I can't believe it's gone by so quickly. And it was shortly after that, the company I worked for, they actually went through a really big shake up where they downsized a really big part of the company. And a lot of my friends and colleagues and my former boss got laid off. I survived, but it kind of put in me this idea that, okay, I think it's time for you to make that career transition. You've been thinking about this for a long time. You got the MBA. You've made these connections and these relationships. It's really kind of a now or never thing. So about a year and a half ago, I decided, okay, I'm going to take 2 years off to kind of figure out what it is I want to do. And the goal was not necessarily, oh, I want to start a business. I want to be an entrepreneur. It was really, I want to connect all of these dots that have been in my life. The attorney, working in presentations, giving speeches, being an actor. There's a way that I can tie all of that together and find something that I'm really passionate about, which actually leads me to the podcast. So I have a very circuitous way of answering your questions, if you notice, Natalie. So it was about exactly a year ago. I was at the gym, and normally I stream NPR through my phone. And that particular day, I couldn't get a signal. So I clicked on this thing called the podcast icon. And I kind of knew what podcasts were, but in my mind, what was a podcast? I picture like Woody Harrelson in like some van speaking into this gigantic microphone, and it's like transmitted on some website. And that was really sort of the 1990s old school version of podcasts. But I clicked on that podcast icon on the iPhone and discovered like all these amazing podcasts that were out there, one of which was Entrepreneur on Fire, which is hosted by John Lee Dumas. And I was hooked, and I was listening to him. I was listening to all these other podcasts and just really just getting sucked into it. And it was just so amazing. And then I went on YouTube, as most people do now. If you want to learn something, looked up how to podcast. And John Lee Dumas actually has a free podcast course that I took. And it was absolutely amazing. He kind of broke down step by step. If you want to get into podcasting, here's how to do it. And I thought to myself, you know what? I can do this. You know, it's just, it was one of those crazy ideas where it's like, I think I can do this.
Yeah.
And so it was about maybe not quite a year when we, it was maybe around January, February that I came up with the idea for Moving Forward, that throughout my career, I've made all these connections with people in the business world, the legal profession, people in theater and in television and film. With this incredible amount of connections that I've made over my life, I've got amazing people with amazing stories. And why should I just hold those stories for myself? Why not share them with an audience? And I also wanted to kind of give back. I really wanted to create a show that would speak to someone who's really struggling to find their passion and really, maybe they are in a rut. Maybe they're not quite getting up in the morning lit up by doing what it is what they do. And I wanted to really kind of come up with something that would inspire them through the stories of other people. And that was really the genesis of this. And then I invited my business partner and now co-host, Kristen, who's in San Diego, because she really has an interesting story and she's so much into personal development. And I thought to myself, well, I don't want to just be an Entrepreneur on Fire clone. You know, I want to interview entrepreneurs. Why not develop a show that has two sides to it? You know, a business side where we talk about careers and following your career passions, and then a more personal side, which is what my co-host does. And so we alternate weeks, and she thought I was crazy. She was like, what's a podcast when I told her this? That was her reaction. Yeah. And she'll say that to this day. And then when I told her what the pitch was, she was both intrigued and terrified at the same time. And I said, listen, let's just do this. Let's just go with this. I know we don't know what we're doing, but I think there's something here, and I think we'll both really enjoy it. And then lo and behold, we launched in March of this year, 2015, and it's, so far, I mean, the response has been really tremendous, and we've connected with some amazing people. In addition to the people that I already had relationships with, just now we're at the point where we're really branching out and bringing on guests, people that, you know, we've connected to through second and third degree connections, and it's just been absolutely phenomenal.
I think this is such a great story. You're trying to use all the different skills that you've utilized and share it with other people. I mean, I very much identify with that feeling. You know, I just feel like I know so many amazing, awesome people, and I just want to be able to share their stories and have a way for people to really get to know them on a deeper level.
Yeah.
And I also think the two sides that you guys do, that really gets to my resume virtue and eulogy virtue question at the end. And they're both such important sides to who people are. And yeah. I think it's great that you guys are exploring that together. And I think Kristen's feeling of being like intrigued and terrified, that's a great feeling. When is. Something gives you that, you got to go for it.
Totally.
Don't think about it too much. Just do it. You just have to take that step.
Absolutely.
Okay, so getting to the public speaking that you were talking about earlier, I think this is such a good topic. I think this is something that a lot of people don't think about. So what tips do you think you could share with people?
Oh, that's a great question. And it's interesting you mention that, because I just released a bonus podcast episode where I kind of break down three tips that I give for public speaking. And these are very basic tips, but I have found that they have helped me. And I've actually coached and worked with people, particularly in the MBA program. There were so many smart people that I knew had all this knowledge they wanted to get out. But when it came time to get up there and actually present that knowledge, they would have the worst panic attacks. And that, to me, I just was so pained for them, because I knew how bright they were. But the three basic ones that I want to share, which I think are really fundamental, number one is breathing. I see this so often with even the most experienced public speakers, that when they get up on stage, they just start speaking. It's as if like the clock has started. I've got to start getting out all the words as quickly as possible. And what I see is that anxiety build up. And I understand it. They want to get all the information out as quickly as possible, and they want to sit down. So one of the tips that I highly, highly recommend, and I've worked with people on this, is their breathing. This particular individual who I called David, he had a problem just hyperventilating. So I said to him, every time he would start, I said, stop, take a deep breath. Stop, take a deep breath. And every time he did, he became much more relaxed. Because when you're taking that breath, you're filling your lungs up, you're filling your diaphragm up with oxygen. But the other thing that you're doing is you're quieting your mind. You're actually reducing that tension level. Because what happens is when you get up on stage, your adrenaline is running, the anxiety and the stress. And what happens is the limbic region in your brain is kicking in. And that's that region that tells you, oh, there's danger. I need to get out of here. And that's what you're feeling when you're getting up on stage in front of a crowd, because your brain is not distinguishing between giving a speech in front of 10 or 20 or 300 people and being attacked by a bear. That's why you're getting that same anxiety reaction. So I tell people, take a breath. It'll quiet your mind. It'll reset everything. And it'll also fill your lungs with oxygen so you can actually get the words out. The other thing that breathing does is it creates what I call this power shift. Because the fear that you get when you get up on stage, you're essentially giving up your power. But if you take a pause before you actually begin the presentation and allow yourself the permission to take a pause so you can take a breath, the power dynamic actually shifts to you as the speaker. The individuals in the audience are going to look at you and think, oh my gosh, why is this person not just starting to speak? And you're actually shifting that power dynamic back to you as the speaker and drawing that attention. The other tips that I give are more just body language, I think, is really important too. Have good posture. Make good eye contact with your audience. Really, when you're giving a speech, at the end of the day, you're having a conversation. It might be a one-way conversation, but the best speakers and presenters I've ever seen, the ones that I model myself after and the ones that I have, and you know, I've seen lots of speeches and presentations, they're very conversational.
Right.
It's not necessarily about being formal or informal, mm-hmm. but they make good eye contact.
Yeah.
Their body language is open and receptive.
Yeah.
So the other tips that I give people, you know, don't put your hands in your pocket or your back. Don't slouch. You know, have good posture, because that also helps with your center of gravity. So having that good body language also tells your audience, I'm open, I'm receptive, I want to develop a connection with you. And the third tip is be conversational. And that's what we do every day. We do it in our personal life. We do it in our careers. Giving a speech or a presentation is no different than having a conversation. It's a conversation with a room full of people. And the tip I give people is just have conversations every day with people, people that you meet on the street, and meeting different people, talking and engaging with different people. So I tell people, if you're going to and a new restaurant that I just discovered, which I'm obsessed with, Shop House, mm-hmm. I go there for lunch like at least once a week. Sometimes I'll just talk to people I'm waiting in line with and say, oh, that's really interesting. You know, I've never tried this dish before. What do you think of that? Engaging in short burst conversations will help you get out of that comfort zone. And then when you get up on stage, you're much more inclined. You're much more acclimated to just talking to a room full of strangers, because all you're trying to do is make a connection, mm-hmm. convey your message. Mm-hmm. So those are the three tips that I usually start out with when I coach someone on public speaking.
I think that those are great tips. I think it's also important to kind of put yourself in the position of the audience and
yes.
what would they want to hear and what would they want to see?
Yeah.
No one wants to see someone like with like a voice that's like trembling and like reading it
Absolutely.
Face down at the paper. And also, you know, there have been so many times where I listen to someone and I don't really care, right? And just remember that, you know, it seems like such a big deal to you, but to that person, they really probably don't care as much as you think they
totally,
do.
Totally, totally. And you know, I even say this, it sounds so counterintuitive. A lot of times it comes down to how you say it, not what you say.
Mm.
And it's so true. Because the one thing you really got to remember is that your audience is there and they want to find some value. They want to connect. Mm-hmm. Whether they're there because they want to be there or because they're mandated to be there, they want to get something out of this.
Right.
And
right.
if you can connect with them, you can engage with them. If you can provide some sense of, wow, this was a valuable use of my time. And if you can inspire them and have them walk away thinking, wow, you know, I learned something, or I feel really inspired that I can do something, then that's really the secret. You're developing that connection and it's really empowerment. You're empowering yourself and then you're empowering your audience. Mm-hmm. And that's really what it comes down to.
Yeah. So my favorite question that you asked me when I was on your show was, how do you get inspired each morning to conquer the day?
Oh. Oh, yeah.
What have you learned about people from that question?
People who are very successful have a couple of things in common that they usually start their day very early.
What's very early?
You know, crack of dawn, 6, 7 a.m., you know, somewhere along that line. it's not really so much a specific time as much as a consistent time. Mm. They're getting up at the same time. And usually it starts with some sort of routine or physical activity. So for some people, it might be yoga. For some people, it might be running, you know, whatever. Or I know for you, a lot of it is walking to work. Mm-hmm. You know, so I think that's really important. Just having that routine where you're really just kind of getting your body and your mind ready. So some physical activity is what I've noticed. And then I also notice that people maximize their commute time. So one of the themes that I've run across is some people are big email crunchers. So they like to crunch through email in the morning because that's when they're not getting as much interruptions with phone calls and email traffic. Some people like you and I, we like to pipe in podcasts when we're on that commute, we're on the way to work. So somehow you are enriching your 15, 20 half hour commute with something that you're able to take away and kind of use in your day or your week. Mm-hmm. So those are just a couple of just general patterns that I've noticed.
I want you to think about some of your favorite guests that you've had on the show, some interesting entrepreneurs. Yeah. What have you kind of learned from them? What are some of the takeaways?
You know what? The one thing that I've learned is that, you know, they've all had these setbacks and failures. And some of them have been really monumental. And the one thing I've learned is that entrepreneurs have this incredible resiliency, this ability to put into perspective, okay, this was a disaster, a total disaster. And yes, I'm going to mourn, I'm going to grieve, but then maybe take a weekend to do that or a week, but then I'm just going to move on to the next thing. And I'm going to use what I learned from that failure to really pivot. And pivot is a word that I use a lot on my podcasts because I really want to share with our audience how to get out of that, what I call that fear paralysis of trying something new. And it doesn't have to be starting a business. It can be something as simple as starting a blog or starting a podcast or creating a video on YouTube. And I've also given presentations on this at Johns Hopkins where I talk to groups of students, and the biggest hurdle that I see with so many people is that they are stopping themselves from trying something. Mm-hmm. It's that get out of your own way. Yep.
Totally understand what you're saying.
And so that's the biggest thing that I've learned from interviewing the guests that we've had so far. It's just a lot of them just aren't afraid to try something. And even at the risk of skinning your knee or stumbling or falling, they're able to take that into perspective, learn what they need to learn from it, and just do it better the next time.
Yeah. Do you have anything that's on your list of something that you want to get done? What's the thing that has remained undone for years now that you want to accomplish on your goal
list? That's a great question. I love that question. I am trying to do it now, Natalie. It's interesting. So we launched this business this year, and we've had a couple of shifts in direction. The one thing that I gotta be very candid. I think the one thing we really got right was the podcast. Mm-hmm. And we have had to kind of refocus what the goal of our business is. And I think we really have a trajectory for 2016. So we really want to focus on taking this concept of moving forward, which is our podcast, and translating that into things like courses and books that can really help other people take what they hear on the podcast and really put it into practice. So that's going to be on our immediate goal list. We're working on that right now. I've got two incredible partners, and the three of us are developing e-courses on specific topics. So I'm working on public speaking. We've got Kristen's working on a course on personal growth and change. And then our third partner, he's doing a fantastic course on financial literacy and just getting a handle and managing your budget and your personal finances. So three very different topics, but what we call the life one-on-one course, you know, the three kind of like big bucket skills that I think come into play.
Give me an example of some that you've kind of talked about on the show that you're trying to translate into one of these ebooks or something.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So, you know, one of the things that I've done in talking to these entrepreneurs is really find out how they're able to take what they know and the skills that they've developed over the years. So I'll give you an example. So I interviewed Jen Grisanti on one of my earlier episodes. She used to be a former network executive. She was laid off from her job. So she was a former VP, very highly placed, got laid off from her job. She was going, you know, and went through a very tumultuous time. And then she was able to pivot and launch an incredible consultancy where she's coaching people on the art of storytelling. I mean, how brilliant is that, right? Yeah. And she's worked with screenplay writers, she's worked with authors, and now she's also working with business leaders, because that's one thing that a lot of businesses are finding. Like, if you think about the biggest brands in the world, like Apple, there's a story behind the brand of Apple. If you think about the biggest, if you think about Facebook, you think about what makes these companies successful, a lot of it is that they are able to tell the story of what it is they do and what it is they provide to their customers. And so what Jen does is she specializes in this. She spent years working on these huge television shows. And so she really, really was able to hone the craft and the skill and the art of storytelling, giving notes on scripts and things like that. So now she's able to consult and help other people achieve those goals. So one of the things that I've noticed with entrepreneurs, and I've noticed this with successful podcasts, is that the more you niche and the more you really take something that you are an expert at or something that you really are passionate about, the more you really, really niche that down. You don't want to try to be like a Walmart and try to do everything. Mm-hmm. You really want to focus. And the more you focus, the more you'll be able to really identify who your audience is, who your market is, and really help them achieve whatever it is they're trying to achieve.
John, what's the hardest thing that you've ever done in your career?
Oh my gosh. In my career or in my life?
In your life.
In my life. Gosh, you know, I'm going to be very personal here, Natalie. I lost my mom in 2008, and it was very sudden. And that was probably the hardest thing I've ever had to deal with. I was living in LA at the time, and she got very sick, and I flew back. I was fortunate that I was able to spend the last, you know, week and a half, 2 weeks with her while she was in the hospital. And we thought she was going to make it, and she was really, really a fighter. She fought all the way till the end, and then losing her was like losing a piece of my soul, a piece of my heart. So that was probably the hardest thing I've ever had to deal with in my entire life. And it, after an experience like that, anything that I've had in my career just pales in comparison. You know, I've shifted careers. I've left, you know, I left a very lucrative, high-paying job to become an entrepreneur and kind of figure out what I want to do. It's very scary to do that. But I will tell you, nothing compares to losing a parent that you're so close to, you know. And not to get somber, but that really was the hardest thing that I've ever had to deal with. And I miss her every day.
What did your mom teach you about being a person?
She really taught me just how to be an authentic person and how to value the relationships and the people that come into your life. She was one of the most gregarious, outgoing people. She was also a businesswoman, very successful. She did so many different things and people just loved her. And one of the things that she really lived her life fully, which is, you know, having faith, being family oriented, and just putting 110% in whatever it is you do. And just make sure that if you choose to do something in life, you go around once. So make sure that it's something that's really going to fulfill you and it's going to inspire other people, especially if you have a family. You know, you want to be able to have some sort of legacy to inspire your kids with. And I'm not just talking about, you know, making a lot of money or being very successful. It's more in the way you live your life. And I think that's probably one of the biggest legacies that she left me. And also just being the most awesome mom on earth. She was just really the best.
Yeah. I'm sure you have a lot of memories with her. If you could relive one of your favorite memories with your mom, which one would it be?
Oh gosh, I have so many. One of the things that she and I used to love to do was on Sundays. So we would go to church, and afterwards during the summer, she really loved getting snow cones. So there was this like little snow cone place that was not far from where she lived. And we would just go there for an afternoon snow cone. And it was just one of those little slice of life, if you want to call it a Capra-esque moment, that she and I used to share every Sunday. And it's just a really fond memory for me, you know. And it's the first thing that comes to mind when you ask me that question. I mean, I have so many
memories with her. Right, yeah. No, that's a very sweet one. Yeah. What do you see in yourself that's most like her?
Oh, I come off as cool and collected, but I can definitely have my moments where I wear my heart on my sleeve. Mm. And I think I get that from her.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. People say I look like my dad, but I have the personality of my mom. So.
Oh, interesting. How did your perspective on life change after her passing?
The enormous pain that you feel after losing someone so close to you is a testament to how much you love them and how much you miss them. And so I think the perspective that I got for a while, I think for about a year or two, I was just in this terrible slump where I was just really just kind of phoning it in, wasn't really engaged. And then I think I came to this realization that that's not what my mom wants. She doesn't want me to just, you know, just check out. And so I think she would want me to really make sure that the time that I have on this earth, that I'm really doing something meaningful. And I think if I'm doing anything right, I think it's because I've been influenced by her. So just make the most of the time that you have, because it's so precious. It's so limited.
Yeah. Would you say that's the life experience that has strengthened you the most?
That's a good question. I would say it's the one that's guided me the most.
Okay.
I'd say what strengthens me the most is, I believe that she's looking down from heaven over me, and I like to think that that's where I get my strength, you know, especially during those difficult times.
Yeah. Well, John, thanks so much for sharing that. I really appreciate it. I think if your mom was watching, she'd be very proud of all the things that you've accomplished and just kind of moving forward in line with your podcast. Hmm. Did you learn anything about yourself that you didn't know before?
The hole that I felt in my heart, in my soul, was really a testament to how much I loved her.
Hmm.
And one of the things that I learned about myself was that I really, really value the people that I keep close in my life.
Mm-hmm.
Really value. And I don't always succeed in this, and it's a work in progress, but I really try to make sure that the time that I spend with people, whether it's someone, you know, I'm getting to know, or someone who's an old friend, that I really want to make the most of that time. Mm-hmm. I really want it to be valuable.
Yeah. Yeah. I really agree with that. Like, making the time that you spend with people valuable time.
What's interesting, because even though Kristen and I do two very different sides of the podcast, there's a lot of convergence. Because when we go into what setbacks and failures you've had in your life, or what has motivated you, a lot of times, even on my side of the podcast, people will get very personal. And they'll share things that are very personal in their life. So it's not all about just careers and business stuff. I've had a lot of guests who have been very candid about things that have happened in their life that have influenced them throughout as the course of their career, just as a result of that. But we find that there's actually quite a bit of convergence at times, more than anything else.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it makes sense, right? Like, what's going on in your personal life totally affects your work life. And
it's so funny because we live in a society where we try to compartmentalize everything.
Yep. Yep. Yep.
But without realizing that it doesn't quite work that way.
Yeah. Yeah. I totally agree with that. Okay, so moving on to the set questions that I ask of everyone,
yes,
John.
Yes.
Can you tell me about a pet peeve of yours?
I think my biggest pet peeve is when, I would say, I'll use a couple words, maybe people who are rude or are not considerate of other people's feelings or time.
Yeah. Are you a pretty punctual person?
I try to be, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then when I'm not, I give fair warning ahead of time.
Yeah.
But it's not even about that. It's more just, if I'm spending time with someone, and I want to say this more positively, I try to be fully present, because I know that that person, I want to appreciate that that person is spending time with me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I want to be fully engaged. I want to be fully present. So if a person's like looking at their phone, or if they're kind of like spacing out, then it's like, why are we doing this? Mm-hmm. You know? Mm-hmm. And so I try to make the most of, because they're only 24 hours in a day, right? We only have 24 hours in a day. And you want to really make the most of that, right?
Mm, totally, totally. And what's your favorite chore, John?
As a recovering attorney, I have a habit, which is common with most attorneys, is that I am a pack rat with paper. So my therapeutic chore is to shred old documents and throw them out or recycle them.
What's the first website you check in the morning, John?
Great question. So I will give you my morning routine in terms of like when I first wake up before I even hop out of bed. It's the smartphone syndrome. So the first thing I'll do is I'll quickly scan through my emails, and then I will quickly, you know, check Facebook. And then what I like to do is I like to, before I start my day and get super serious about stuff, is I like to have a little comic relief. So it's either going to be BuzzFeed or Cracked.
What's Cracked?
Cracked.com. Mm-hmm. Have you ever seen the magazine? It's sort of the, it used to be a magazine. It was a competitor to Mad Magazine. And it's sort of a satirical magazine where they really write these really funny articles. It's sort of like The Onion, except the stuff that they write on is real. So it's written in the tone of The Onion, but it's about stuff that's actually current. And they have everything from pop culture to current events to politics. And so I have the Cracked app on my my phone. And so I'll scan through it. And sometimes it's just, I don't even have time to read the articles, but the headlines and the photos will sometimes just crack me up. So it's either that or BuzzFeed. So there you go.
Okay. So then what is your morning or evening routine?
Okay. Rituals? Morning routine after I'm going through these silly apps and and checking all this nonsense. I definitely start out with a morning run. That's something that I have to do every day. So 5 to 6 days a week, I have this pretty consistent run, this trail around where I live, where I run. And then after that, usually I'll go for a swim. And you know, the place that I go to has an indoor pool. So I love to swim. And I like to incorporate physical activity. That's the best way for me to get started. And then from there, that's what I feel like will make me the most productive during the day. And I notice that when I miss that, I'm just not as productive. It's harder for me to get in the zone. And then I'd like to ideally shut things down at least an hour before I go to sleep, because I've read and I've heard from other people that if you have like your phone up, your computer or whatever, it actually overstimulates your brain and it's a lot harder to fall asleep. Mm-hmm. So I like to shut down the electronics an hour before I go to sleep, but I'm not always successful at that.
Yeah, that's tough to do.
Yeah. But it's true. There have been studies that have shown like, and I'm really bad with this, that if you have your phone right on the night table and then you're looking at it while you're lying in bed, the lights and the images actually stimulate your brain. And it makes it a lot harder for you to fall into the sleep pattern.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Okay, so in line with my favorite op-ed article from the Times, what is your best resume virtue, John, and what's your best eulogy virtue?
Okay, so my best resume virtue is that I like to just try things. And even I'm not the biggest techie, but when it comes to trying a project like starting a podcast, I will do everything I can to learn the ins and outs of it, even to the point where maybe I go a little overboard on it, but I will be able to kind of distill it, digest it, and just give it a try. And some people have also said, you know, you really kind of think outside the box. I guess that's what they call it. But I like to try just different things. I'm not afraid to explore different technologies or different mediums and things like that. So I've played around with YouTube and stuff like that. And I love the fact that there's just so many different ways to get your message out there. And I'm a big proponent of that. That's eulogy, the virtue. I would say, it's going to come back to a common theme, loving Son.
All right. So who is someone famous, John, you would want to listen to this?
Okay. So this is where I'm going to give you a very different answer. And I thought about this question very, very hard. It really is my mom. I really want her to hear this episode. Yeah. I dedicated the launch of my podcast to her. And it was the one thing that if I could have one wish, it would be that she'd be able to hear it, because I think she would really enjoy it. You know, podcasts are something that she didn't really get exposed to before we lost her. And I think it was a fairly still a niche medium when she passed away. So I would love for her to be able to hear this and just to know that how much I love her and how much I miss her.
So final question, you know, you've been doing this podcast now for some time. What do you think is the one takeaway message you want your audience to have?
If you have an itch to do something, do it. Just do it. Even if it's a hobby. If you want to write a blog, write a blog. If you have something that's itching inside of you that you want to share with an audience, today is the barriers to entry to doing almost anything have never been lower. Do you know how easy it is to build a website? Do you know how easy it is to create a YouTube channel or a blog? and even a podcast, it doesn't take that much to start something like this. So if you have that thing that you've been itching to do, oh, I've always wanted to write a book. And I hear this from people. So write a book. You know, all you need to do is just sit down and start doing it. And, James Clear, he's a phenomenal blogger and he's a digital media entrepreneur in this space. He gives the best advice. He's also a triathlete. So his advice is he has something called the 2-minute rule, that anything you want to do, whether it's start a blog or start a business or get into shape, the first 2 minutes are always going to be the hardest. Like, in other words, the beginning will always be the hardest, but that once you get over that hurdle, and then once you're carving time out, like 5 minutes a day, 10 minutes a day, and you're devoting it to whatever it is you want to do, then over time, before you know it, you'll have created something. And that's the really cool part. And the only person that's ever going to get in your way of doing something is yourself.
Yeah, totally. I agree with that 100%.
Yeah.
Well, that's a great way to end the podcast. So thanks for joining this episode of Person Natalie with guest John Lim. I think this week's life lesson has been to just get out there and do it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the old Nike adage, right?
Yeah, exactly. Hope you all have a fantastic week and join us for next week's episode. As always, let's talk awesome.